I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Can schools reopen without teachers being vaccinated? The Biden administration and the CDC have sent contradictory messages about that important question. Here's a Washington Post montage of CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, President Biden, and journalist Savannah Guthrie questioning Vice President Harris.
That safe reopening does not suggest that teachers need to be vaccinated in order to reopen safely.
We can reopen schools safely, even if all of the teachers are not vaccinated.
Dr. Walensky spoke to this in her personal capacity. Obviously, she's the head of the CDC, but we're going to wait for the final guidance to come out so we can use that as a guide for schools around the country.
Teachers should be prioritized in the 1B group. That is the group with greater than 75-year-olds. But from a scientific standpoint, we know that it's possible to reopen schools safely without all of the teachers being vaccinated.
I think that we should be vaccinating teachers. We should move them up in the hierarchy as well.
22 states, I believe, have prioritized teachers in terms of vaccinations,
but the states have the... Is it safe for them?
Well, I think that we have to decide if we can put in place safe measures.
In-person learning in the Philadelphia School District for 9,000 students in pre-K through second grade was set to resume on Monday, part of a hybrid model, but ongoing disagreements between the school district and the teachers' union over safety have forced the start date to move once again now to March 1st. While the majority of teachers are voicing opposition to returning to the classroom, parents are divided, wanting their children to be safe and get the education that remote instruction cannot provide. Today in Radio Times, we look at the district's plan to reopen, what health experts are saying about the risk of COVID, and we'll be talking with a teacher and two parents. We begin with Dr. Susan Coffin, and she's a pediatric infectious disease doctor at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, a faculty member at CHOP's Policy Lab, where she has co-written guidance for school reopenings. And this is something that the district used to guide their decision. And Dr. Coffin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. Can you understand the reluctance? And I ask that, not just that we heard some confusion coming from the CDC and the Biden administration, but we're talking about two administrations over the course of a year with very different messaging. We've got really dire public health warnings. We've got concerns about a variant. We've got closures all over the place. We've got problems with vaccines and testing rollouts. And I think in many ways, a kind of confused and worried public. So can you understand the reluctance?
Absolutely. I think your description of this moment is being characterized by confusion and concern is spot on. There are a lot of things in flux, but I do think it's important that we remember that there are some evidence of flux that are moving towards improvement, as well as the things you've mentioned, which are obvious reasons why people have expressed concern.
What are the conditions that need to be met for schools to reopen? And the district has talked about this, but just for our listeners to make sure we're all on the same page, what needs to happen in the classroom?
I think overall, a school district needs to have developed and been able to implement a good safety plan. And a good school safety plan looks a lot like a good community safety plan. It includes those incredibly basic things that are almost tedious to list. We hear them so often, but masking, distancing, good screening so that people who are ill or exposed aren't coming to school, good partnerships with public health so appropriate measures are taken when individuals may have been exposed or infected. Those are really the essential ingredients for a safe school reopening plan.
Those are basic. We have heard them untold numbers of times. Mm-hmm. And since we're talking about the Philadelphia School District, can schools meet those very specific and important guidelines?
You know, I've not had an opportunity to go through each and every school. I think, though, that because most of these guidance have to do with people and how space is used, that yes, they can be achieved. It's just a matter of making sure that the individuals who are coming to school to participate in or support in-person learning have the resources they need in terms of masking and cleaning and doing hand washing or hand cleaning with alcohol hand rub, and that the space is being used appropriately so that we don't have people crowding into a classroom beyond what a sensible capacity right now of 6 feet between each person would indicate.
What about ventilation? And there was a picture of a what looked like a air conditioner, frankly, from the 1950s that I saw in a window in one of the schools in Philadelphia. How important is ventilation to ensuring that teachers are safe, that staff is safe, and of course, that children are safe as well?
Ventilation is part of a multi-layered plan, but it's not the first, second, or even third critical ingredient. Really, the right equation for having safety in a school or any public area is having people participate in masking, making sure we don't have too many people in a single area, and making sure that we are only inviting people to join a group if they've not been exposed and if they don't have any symptoms of coronavirus. Those are the things that must be in place to have safety in a school or any other public area.
And yet this is an airborne disease.
Well, this gets to be a somewhat nuanced scientific debate. Mm-hmm. But by airborne, droplets are spread by air. And so I'd agree that in that extent, this is airborne. But droplets which carry the virus settle, and they settle typically within 6 feet of where they are emitted. So if we preserve a distance of 6 feet or greater between people, we provide that spatial protection. We add on to it two masks, one by the person by both individuals perhaps having a conversation, and then we've got both space as well as two physical barriers to catch those droplets. And that right there is a lot of safety, and that has nothing to do with ventilation.
How important is it that everyone who enters a school building be tested to make sure that they don't have a fever or any particular symptom that might be associated with COVID?
There are a lot of different ways to test. I think probably the most critical test is not a laboratory test, but a cognitive test, a test that each family or school staff member asks themselves each morning before they embark off to school. Do I feel well? Have I recently been exposed? Do I have any reason to be concerned that I might be accidentally bringing coronavirus into my school or my workplace setting? That's the really critical test that each and every person who's going to participate in in-person learning needs to be doing.
And what about the rate of infection in neighborhoods or in communities? We'll get to individual families, but just sort of looking, obviously there are rates of high COVID infection and rates of low COVID infection. How important is literally where a school is located?
I think to the extent that a school is composed of members of a well-defined community, we can think about what it means to be a member of a community with high or low rates of disease and coming to school. I think really what's critical, though, are those initial questions. Have I been exposed? Do I have any symptoms? And am I doing those extra safeguards, even if I haven't been exposed and even if I don't have symptoms, of wearing my mask, cleaning my hands, and keeping my distance? So in those ways, we provide extra safety, even if somebody might have an asymptomatic infection and not be accidentally entering a school building, not knowing that they might have the coronavirus germ.
We heard that montage about vaccinations, and it seems that the experts, you know, the people like yourself, are a bit all over the place when it comes to vaccinations. I heard Dr. Fauci saying that it wasn't a prerequisite for all teachers, but nonetheless, wouldn't it make sense It would take time, but wouldn't it make sense to just get all teachers vaccinated? And then, you know, you've got some of these safety issues covered.
Well, I think it would make sense to do that if we had to rely on vaccination as our only way to keep people safe. But we know from the past 11 months that we've got a lot of ways to keep people safe that have nothing to do with vaccination. Just here in our city, we've gone over the course of 6 weeks from a very high level of viral transmission in our community right around Christmas and New Year's, where we had rates of test positivity in excess of 20%, down to now below 5% test positivity. Mm-hmm. We've done all of that without introducing very much vaccine into our community and without a lot of other changes, other than what I believe is a real doubling down of our community to say, this has got to stop. And we need to really adhere to our precaution measures.
I'm thinking, though, about either teachers or staff or students who have someone at home who is at higher risk. Maybe they're older. Maybe they have some kind of chronic disease that could put them at risk for COVID-19. What do we do to protect those people?
Well, I think that the way people understand their own personal and their household risks has to be accommodated. There are so many different types of families and individuals within a given community that do have genuine conditions that put them at higher risk of significant illness. And I think it's very likely that there will be many families that make a thoughtful decision that they do not want to have anyone participate in, in-person learning.
Don't answer that. Right.
I won't.
Let me just quickly, I was just making sure that we're not going to lose you there, Susan Coffin. And we are talking with Dr. Susan Coffin, and she is an a pediatric infectious disease doctor at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and is a faculty member at CHOP's Policy Lab. She has co-written guidance for school reopenings, and I should add that the district used some of those guidelines in their decision to do some reopenings here in the city of Philadelphia. Here's a tweet from Charles, and we're almost up in a break here. I understand the concern that teachers have, although there is success at the Archdiocese schools, which have been in person all year with appropriate mitigation in place. Just a quick response to that, if you could, Dr. Coffin.
Sure. I think that is a really interesting and important observation. In our community, we do have multiple schools, both public and independent, that have been open and have been operating successfully. Some of these schools have the luxury of lots of space and resources, but many of the schools are very old and have relatively modest resources available to them. And so I think looking within our community and across the nation, we can learn a lot about how schools can and have opened safely.
And I do want to pick up on that after this very short break. That's Dr. Susan Coffin, and you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with our guest, Dr. Susan Coffin. She's a pediatric infectious disease doctor at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, talking about the district's plan to at least partially reopen the school, set up some kind of hybrid learning for younger students, at least in the beginning. We'll be talking with a couple of parents and also talking with a teacher in just a couple of moments. And we want to talk to you, Radio Times, at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Dr. Coffin, let me just pick up on something you said right before the break, that schools are doing this, they're doing it safely, and are doing able to bring children back into the classroom. And I know that's certainly true for a lot of suburban school districts, but there is still a reluctance there. And what are they doing that the district here in Philadelphia could and should do?
I think that a lot of the success that we've seen in our region and in other parts of the country and in some large urban districts that look a bit like ours is committing to the basics. And I think we all roll our eyes when we hear, you got a mask, right. You have to stay 6 feet apart, you have to stay home when you're sick. That's really where the success is coming from, though. There's nothing fancy and nothing novel about how to prevent this virus transmitting, whether we're in schools or in our homes or at the supermarket. It's those same basic ingredients. I think what does distinguish it for those areas that have been successful is the degree of commitment, particularly that the families that are using the schools have to help their students do what they need to do, which some children have become very good at 11 months in, and other children are still practicing being good mask wearers for long periods of time.
And what about things like extracurricular activities, sports, theater, you know, singing, chorus, all of that? Should that be put on hold for a while?
I think it depends on where a school district is and where the community is. I really appreciate just how much loss students have had, and it's not just learning loss, but just disruption to just about every aspect of their life. And so there are a variety of different extracurricular activities that could probably resume pretty quickly and pretty safely. Indoor sports, musical activities that involve singing or playing of brass and woodwind instruments, however, are riskier. And I think that those will need to be reintroduced a bit more slowly.
I know you have to leave us. I just want to quote the head of the CDC, Walensky, said, and I'm quoting here, that local decision-making must be based on a thorough review of what science tells us is working and understanding of the lived experiences, challenges, and perspectives of teachers, school staff, parents, and students. Do you agree with that?
I do. This is really about community and the school community committing to each other and doing what we've been asking each other to do throughout this pandemic, which is do some things that are a bit unnatural and a bit challenging in order to keep yourself as well as the people around you safe. It's kind of the ultimate public health message.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Dr. Susan Coffin, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. She's a pediatric infectious disease doctor at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And joining us now is Kate Sanix-Lerner. She is a kindergarten teacher at DeBurgos, which is at 4th and Lehigh. It's an elementary school. She's a member of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers and a member of the Caucus of Working Educators. And Kate Sanix-Lerner, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you.
So what does the district have to do so that you and other teachers will feel confident that you can safely return to the classroom?
The district has to be more transparent. They have to give us assurances because, you know, as Dr. Walensky said, you quoted, this is based on our lived experiences. Our lived experiences with the district have been fraught with misinformation, disinformation. Hmm. So, you know, we need them to be more transparent.
So do you not trust the district, or you're waiting for more open conversation about how this is going to work?
We're looking for both. I'm looking for both. I want more open conversation, especially with parents. And, you know, given the asbestos issues that we've had and the other ventilation problems, you know, we still have 30 schools that have no acting ventilation systems at all. And so those are some of my concerns. They haven't addressed the bathroom issues, the ventilation in bathrooms in the majority of our schools. So when are we going to get this information based on science so that we can feel safer coming back into schools.
You were listening to Dr. Coffin, and she was saying, you know, this is the message that has been sent for nearly a year now about masking and distancing and hand washing and doing some of these basic public health measures. And it looks like it has worked in many schools. Does that in any way give you confidence that it can be applied in Philadelphia?
It really doesn't, because, again, based on what I know, families have to work. And I understand that a lot of this is our families need their providers to get back to work.
Right.
And in that effort, they sometimes send their kids to school when they're sick, or if someone is in their household is sick. So we're really playing a game here of roll the dice. And, you know, I have someone at home who is at high risk, and I don't want to, and I'm at high risk, I don't want to risk bringing the COVID virus back into my husband. I don't want to get it myself. So it's just too risky for us.
Would you make vaccinations, I mean, for all teachers? I don't know if you can make it mandatory or not, because we know there is vaccine hesitancy among many people, but would you make vaccines a criteria for returning to the classroom?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I just got my vaccination email today. I'm very grateful. Yeah, I'm really grateful that CHOP is providing vaccinations for those that are going back into the classroom. And that is a major step. And that's one of the things that teachers are asking for. And I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
Let me read some comments. One from Helen. She says, as a former teacher, I don't have a lot of confidence in kids and staff's ability to socially distance and use the proper cleaning protocols in schools. Do you share that, Kate Sanex Lerner?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I'm really hesitant about is that I've heard that teachers will be responsible for cleaning, like cleaning the partitions that students use. And I'm sorry, I'm just not going to do that. It's not my expertise. It's not my job. And it puts me at further risk.
You teach kindergarten. So you're dealing with, what, five, 6 year olds. Some of my favorite people in the world are 5 and 6 years old. how is remote learning or instruction going for them and going for you?
It's not been ideal, and I absolutely love my kindergartners, and I wish we were in class together. I really do. And we say that to one another almost every day. But we've made it work. I have students who are learning. Almost all of my students have made gains. And while it's not ideal, it's working very well. And I think that the hybrid plan is going to cause some disruption and loss there in those gains.
In how so? And the idea would be to bring children into the classroom a couple of days a week and then have remote learning from home. How would that disrupt what you have observed so far?
Well, part of the issue is that the number of students returning is so low that I'm only going to have two students Monday, Tuesday, and two or three students Thursday, Friday. Hmm. And I will only be able to directly interact with the rest of the students, the seven that are at home, virtually again on Wednesdays. So what's going to happen is that those students that are at home are not going to have the same amount and quality of interaction with me to continue their gains in learning.
So you feel like with them all remote together that you can reach them equally and teach them equally,
absolutely.
I guess?
Absolutely. Or if ideally, if all of them could come back and we have the space and we could all socially distance with six and six, that would even be ideal. But this hybrid is really, and I wish teachers had been consulted, it's difficult.
Let me read. Here's a question from Dick, who says, reopening with a 6-foot distancing means all students won't fit in the room. You get a hybrid. This means the teachers work twice as hard, juggling face-to-face and distance students, right, he asks. And you kind of answered that, but looking at your classroom, you have, what, 10 students?
12.
12 students. Mm-hmm. Could they fit in your classroom 6 feet apart? Is that a possibility?
Unfortunately, that's another thing that I don't know, because my classroom is on the list of rooms with zero ventilation. So they're moving me to another classroom, and I don't know what that classroom looks like or what the setup is. So I'm thinking some rooms it might be possible, but definitely not with the room that I was scheduled to be in.
If the district, you know, goes ahead and there is someone else who is signing off on this, who is a public health person, but if they decide we're going to do this and you are reluctant and other teachers are reluctant, what options do you have?
Well, I have been able and actually did at the beginning of the year apply for accommodations because, as I said, I'm high risk and so is my spouse. But that would be my only option. I would have to opt out of returning to the classroom. I don't want to do that with my students. That would be even more disruptive, but that's something that the district needs to consider.
And final question. I mean, at some point, everyone's going to have to go into the classroom. I'm assuming we can all agree on that. Do you think it's possible then for the district to open all the schools if teachers are vaccinated, if these cleaning protocols are in effect, if the masking is mandated, you know, all the things that public health people say, if that criteria can be met, do you see the schools opening?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've wanted to be back. It's so difficult to be virtual, and especially when it's all new to everyone. And we've done, we've gone above and beyond, both families and the staff. If the district would be, you know, they need to address the decades of neglect in these buildings. And that's why the teachers aren't back. It's not the teachers don't want to be back. It's that conditions aren't met for us to be safely back.
Well, Kate Sanix-Lerner, I really appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. And thank you for the work you do as a teacher in Philadelphia.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And she's a kindergarten teacher at DeBurgos Elementary School, and that is at 4th and Lehigh in Philadelphia. Well, joining us now is Takina Goodman, and she's the mother of two daughters at Thurgood Marshall Elementary School, of course, in Philadelphia. One's a fourth grader and one is in kindergarten. And Takina Goodman, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, Takina. Nice to have you join us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And we're going to hear from two parents for the rest of the hour, starting with Takina Goodman. And we want to hear from you, especially from parents. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. First of all, how are your children doing having to go to school remotely? How has it been for them?
So my oldest daughter, it's kind of tough, but because she's been in the school before and she had to do it last year, she got the hang of it. That's with my fourth grader. Now with my kindergartner, it's fairly hard because she was in a pre-K classroom prior to starting kindergarten. So she went from sitting in the actual classroom with a teacher to having to learn on a computer, which she don't really understand, like, why I have to do it this way. And being as though that she's in a daycare center throughout the day while I'm at work, it's pretty hard on her because not all kids have the same school schedule.
Do your children they want to go back to school?
Yes, my youngest daughter, she's excited. She's very excited to get to a classroom because in her mind, she thinks she's going to a big kid's school.
as opposed to the child care, correct?
Yes.
Now, how has it been for you and their dad? Both of you work. How has it been for you as a parent holding down a job and then trying to make sure that your children are learning remotely? What's that been like for you, Takena?
Honestly, it's a struggle because, like I said, some days my youngest daughter, she don't want to log onto the computer. So now the center is now calling us like, hey, mom, hey, dad, she doesn't want to do this. She doesn't want to do that. So now we have to stop what we're doing at work or take days off of work to try to teach her on the computer versus if she was actually in the school in the classroom, she wouldn't have this problem. No 5-year-old has that enough attention span to sit in front of a computer for 6-7 hours a day.
Absolutely. And how about for your older child? How does that compare?
It's actually easier. Like I said, last year she had a struggle with it last year, you know. But being as though she was already introduced to it last year, she's okay with it this year. It's not exactly what she would like, but she's learning to adjust to it because she knows that's how school goes as of right now.
Do you feel confident, and this is, your children would, I assume, be going back to Thurgood Marshall Elementary School. Do you feel confident that the school will take measures to make sure that your children are safe with masking and distancing and hand washing and all the things that we've been talking about?
Yes, I'm 100% confident with it. I'm 100% confident with it because I already feel confident enough to send my child to a child care center, whereas though they don't have as much resources as the school district. But if they're pulling it off, I believe 100% these schools can do the same exact thing.
Well, Takena, we're going to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, talk with you a couple more minutes, and then we've got another parent who will be joining us as well. And again, that's Takena Goodman. She's the mother of two daughters at Thurgood Marshall Elementary School, and talking about the fact that the district wants to open some of the schools for some of the lower grades. There has been some pushback from the teachers' union, from teachers, and we heard from one of those teachers. Parents are more divided. And we want to hear from you, Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let me just quickly recap here what we're talking about during the show today. The CDC recently released a plan for schools K through 12 to reopen during the pandemic, provided they follow specific safety guidelines, things like masking and distancing and hand washing. The Philadelphia School District wants to open schools for students in the lower grades for about 2 days a week, starting on March 1st. A majority of the teachers with union support are saying no until the district can ensure their safety. Parents are more divided about sending their kids back to school. And we're talking with Takena Goodman. She's the mother of two daughters who attend Thurgood Marshall Elementary School. Takena, has the school, have the teachers been in touch with you and also your children to sort of helping them with remote learning?
Occasionally. They haven't been the best with it, but I understand, you know, my kids aren't the only ones they have to attend to, or I'm not the only parent that they have to reach out to. It's kind of harder now because they have 10, 12 kids per classroom, especially with kindergarten, that, you know, they're shuffling through classes. So not all teachers can remember, okay, well, I have to speak to this parent directly. I have to speak to that parent directly. Everything is like so out of whack now that they're doing this remote learning versus if they would have been in a classroom. You know, it's harder.
Definitely. I certainly understand that. Do you worry about kids who are learning remotely that don't have the kind of family support and community support that other kids, sounds like your kids, have?
Definitely. Not, like I said before, now it don't only affect my kids, it affects all the kids. It even affects the older kids. The older kids, when their parents going to work and they're supposed to be on the computer learning, they don't have to really get up and get on them because they don't have that enforcement versus as the parent making sure they're going to school. They're there when they need to be there. You have the older kids, high school kids, that supposed to be in class, but it's not in class and running the streets and getting in trouble. Oh. So like I said, it don't just affect the younger ones. It affects all our kids.
So what do you hope? Do you hope things open on March 1st? And if that happened, would your, for instance, your kindergarten age daughter, would she go back to school? She's one of the 9,000?
Yes, my daughter is returning to school. I need her to get that in-classroom setting. Her being in the center right now is not giving her what she needs. She's sitting in front of a computer, listening to someone talk. And she has teachers that's trying to direct her and 12 other kids. That's not helping her what she needs.
And how about, and how about socialization? I mean, she's in a center, so it seems like there are other children that she can play with. But do you worry about the kind of losing out on some of the social aspects of education?
In a way, but not really. I mean, she gets to be around other kids, so I'm not too concerned about that. But my main concern is her education. My daughter went from knowing how to spell basic kindergarten words to words, though. Now she's like, okay, well, I have to sound it out now. When these are words that she knew how to spell since she was three. So it's like she's getting the help that she needs, but as she's not getting the basics that she needs versus where she was actually in preschool. Now she's in kindergarten. I feel like she's going backwards. And I know a lot of parents probably feel like, you know, a lot of your kids are going backwards when they should be progressing. But there's nothing that we can do because now in the classroom, when they're in school throughout the day, they're supposed to be learning. Now, when parents come pick them up or parents return home and try to do a little bit of homework and extracurricular work with them, it's like the kids want to shut down because they've been sat in front of a computer all day.
Yeah. I hear you. Well, I really appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Keena Goodman, good luck and thanks for joining us on the show. Do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now we're joined by another parent. This is Shakita Gaines, and she is president of the Philadelphia Home and School Council. She has two children who attend the Philadelphia Virtual Academy, and she has another perspective on opening schools from our other guest, Takena Goodman. And Shakita Gaines, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be heard. Hi, guys. How are you feeling today?
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Let me just make sure, especially parents can join our conversation, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Why are you reluctant for schools to reopen for children?
Honestly, it's not my opinion. It's truly just the opinion of our 81% of parents who took our polls. Our parents are speaking out and they're stating that they do not want their children back in these schools because of the ventilation, because of asbestos, because of mold, because of lead. I can only speak for them. I do not speak truly by myself. So mm-hmm. This is their opinions and I'm speaking for them.
And this was a poll that was sent out to what, all parents?
It was put out on our Facebook pages. It was put out on Instagram. It was put out on email. And we have put that out there for parents and stakeholders alike to take the poll.
We began with an infectious disease doctor, a pediatrician, who said, look, if you can mask and if you can distance and you can wash your hands and, you know, take some of these safety measures, you can have children pretty much safely return to school. Is that a message you think that will resonate with some of the parents that you talk to?
Absolutely not. The reality is that a lot of these schools have zero ventilation. They have no reason to, you know, be open. These schools should have never been open in the first place because of asbestos, mold, and lead. And now we have ventilation issues on top of it. When you add just a window, imagine children being in school right now with that window fan being open and that air blowing in to these kids' rooms. It would be absolutely ridiculous to have those kids in here. So I understand what the doctors are saying. And I'm greatly appreciated for CHOP for actually giving out that information. But that only works in schools that have great ventilation. And that's why I worked for the Archdiocese. That's why I worked for other school districts, because their ventilation was great. Their ventilation was almost top notch. So they didn't have these issues that we are having right now. So most of our schools have asthma triggers.
And that's certainly an issue in Philadelphia among a number of children. So what do you want the district to do? I mean, what would be and sounds like what you're asking for would cost money. No, you know, we shouldn't argue about that for sure. But what do you want the district to do?
Actually, I just want them to be transparent, fully transparent, and have everyone in the room. You can't just have a bunch of people and just five or six people in a room and say, this is what it is, and come up with a plan. You have to speak to every stakeholder, every single one of us, and get all of our information and our data. That's one. The other thing is true ventilation. True ventilation has to be a part of that boiler room. Those boiler rooms were not checked in these tests. Most of those boiler rooms have asbestos, mold, and lead. And if they are sending, you know, air through, they're still getting that air coming in. We want the same respect, you know, from the mayor that they have for restaurants. If ventilation has to be, you know, in order to have 50% of your target audience to come in. Right. If 50% you want more patrons to come into your restaurant, you have to have better ventilation. It's the same thing that happens with schools. We want that same respect. Our children deserve that same respect. And I have to give, you know, understanding to I want to say Tanika. Is that her name that was on previously?
Takena.
I understand Takena wholeheartedly what she's saying. I want the same for my child. I want my child to be able to go back into a school and that's healthy and they could walk in and see their friends and family. But we have to understand that these children will still be on a laptop when they go inside of these buildings. They're not doing the same classroom setting. And I think that's what parents don't understand. They're thinking they're coming into these schools and going, okay, let's go back to basics. That's not it. They are still on a laptop. It will still be on a laptop when they go into these buildings.
Where do you stand on this issue of vaccinations, especially for teachers and school staff?
It's up to choice, but I absolutely agree that we should have vaccinations before we sit here and jump the gun. The reality is that we have a lot of teachers who have been in these buildings for years, which means they're seasoned. Which means they're acceptable to any kind of diseases that come in. You can't put them at, you know, risk. Our children sometimes are carriers. That's what we're learning, that they are carriers of this disease. I am high risk. I actually had COVID-19. I almost died from COVID-19. Wow. It is the worst experience in the world to have. And if people have never had it, it's quite understandable why you feel the way you do. But so many people have lost their lives behind it. And we don't want to lose more teachers. We don't want to lose students. We don't want to lose anyone in this. We just want to be safe.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Shakita Gaines, and she is president of the Philadelphia Home and School Council. And the council sent out, or I guess put up a poll on their Facebook page, and about 81% of parents said they did not want the schools to open up for their children to go back for in-classroom learning instruction. And we want to hear, especially from the parents in our audience, Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Shakita, I'm really sorry to hear that you got COVID. Are you fully recovered?
I am fully recovered. It took almost about 4 months. Wow. I had a lot of treatments that I had to go through. It was hard for me to, you know, walk up steps for, you know, about 3 months. It takes the life out of you, the breath out of you. It's not one of those things where it's a regular flu. When you catch this, and if you're, you know, acceptable to the way it, you know, it can conform your body, you can almost die. My children found me on the floor. That is something I never want anybody to experience. So I have a different opinion about it, but sure. I understand truly why children need to be back in our schools. I understand truly that, you know, parents are frustrated. I also understand that our teachers are frustrated as well. They want to be back in these buildings. we want them there. But there's a lot of mistrust that is happening right now. And we need the school district to be extremely transparent. And we need them to do more work than put in a Family Dollar, you know, fan in a window with plywood.
You have two children, two school-age children. They actually attend the Philadelphia Virtual Academy. So you're probably used to remote or online learning. Are there lessons that you can say to other parents about how to make that work for your children?
Honestly, it was all about scheduling. And to clear things up, I pulled my children out of the Philadelphia Virtual Academy. One is actually in Cyber Charter, and the other one is waiting in September to go to a regular public school. So he will be in public school as of September, but only when it's safe. Only when it's safe. But my child will be in the second grade at that time going into there. But right now he's homeschooling. I had to pull him to homeschool. It was all about scheduling. It really was about their mental health. It was about what they wanted. I actually had to have that conversation of what they could do and what they could not do. What was acceptable and what was not acceptable. And we did a timeline. And it was, you know, I understand that the school district has them online at certain periods of time, and it was too much. So I talked to their teachers about what could they do outside of this. But that's a different ballgame than what the school district in Philadelphia rolled out. And the school district in Philadelphia did not roll out a great plan when it came down to virtual learning. We also have a petition out here that we put out on change.org that has almost got about 800 signatures for less screen time for Philadelphia school district students. We want our children to have less screen time. And we also want the school district of Philadelphia to have a plan of action in case this ever happens again. This should never be one of those things where we're scrambling for, you know, to how to work this system. We need to know that our children's mental health matter.
Shaquita, let me see if, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. I'm looking at the clock. Let me just see if I can squeeze one or two comments from our listener. One from Janet says teachers should be considered essential workers and should have been among the first in line for vaccination. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's without a doubt. They should have been right there, you know, right after doctors and nurses and all those people that's out there in the front line. Our teachers should have been right there with them.
What do you want? Have you sat down with Superintendent Heider or members of the school district? I'm just looking ahead. And as we're hearing from everyone who's on the show today, everyone wants the schools to open and for children to be safely back in the classroom. So looking ahead, what are the steps you want this district to make? And what would you say to Superintendent Heider, anybody else who's in authority?
So first and foremost, I have not talked to Dr. Heider personally, but I have talked to school district officials. And honestly, he has a hard job. His job is to take all the heat, all the heat.
No question.
Of what's happening right now.
Exactly.
So honestly, I would ask for, you know, one, transparency, but community involvement. And we're not talking about, you know, just the people you know or the people you like or the yes people. We want community involvement, which means you have to deal with the hard questions and the hard answers and respond to us respectfully. Because, again, these are our tax dollars. These are our schools that you know, our tax dollars pay for. So we have the right to speak into what's happening in our schools. So transparency, we want true ventilation. We want to be a part of this, and we want to really see. We want really for you to come up with a plan of how to fix these schools moving forward.
Well, I hear you. I'm glad you're feeling better. And Shaquita Gaines, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She is president of the Philadelphia Home and School Council. And that's it for this hour of Radio Times, busy hour with four guests talking about some of the challenges facing the Philadelphia School District and how and whether to open classrooms safely for the many children who attend this school. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscow-Aim. Thank you so much for joining us.